Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the magnificent Dar Williams singing with the incredible Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the song, or wrote the words, the Solartopia song. We're back for another hour in Solartopia. We're going to talk today about stolen elections and the Trumpitude. And how he got in there and how we need to get him out. We have declared August 9th. Make a note of that on your calendars. Wednesday, August 9th, the upcoming anniversary. It's actually the 72nd anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki. And also, let's see, 74 is when Nixon resigned. Also on August 9th. So it's National Nagasaki Nixon Day coming up on August 9th. We're going to have a flagship rally at Santa Monica. There's a magnificent statue, sculpture, the mushroom sculpture made out of chain link. It's, I think it's about 5 tons, this thing, and it's 26 feet high. It's a beautiful piece of sculpture. And every year there on Hiroshima or Nagasaki Day, there is a commemoration. So this year we're going to do it on August 9th. To commemorate both the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the resignation of Richard Nixon, and what we call for the resignation of Donald Trump. Bob Fitrakis, who's going to join us in a minute. Bob, are you with us?
I'm with you, Harvey.
All right, my man. So Bob and I have co-authored a piece. It's currently up at Reader Supported News, and it's also going to be up at freepress.org real soon. Orange is the new orange, calling for Donald Trump to resign by August 9th, Nagasaki Nixon Day. That's just 2 weeks away. But, you know, you never know with Trump. I mean, he could see a hot Russian woman walking down the hall and decide he's had enough and just go ahead. I love today's news. Trump tweeted something about kicking transgender people out of the military. And some general, I don't know if he's the top general or what, issued a major media statement saying that, no, we're not kicking transgender people out of the media. I love that. It's fantastic. Gives us hope that when Trump, you know, after the upcoming terrorist attack, which we all expect soon, and then the upcoming war, which we all expect soon, that maybe the military won't follow the lunatic in chief's lead. So that's a good one. We're joined by my co-author, co-conspirator for many years, Bob Fitrakis. We are co-authors together of the Strip and Flip Disaster of America's Stolen Elections, available at freepress.org. And also Marta Steele. Marta, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, Marta. Sorry for the time mix up. I gave you 2:00 Pacific time, which I am currently enjoying, having flown out here last night. I'm in sunny Los Angeles, and man, it is sunny and it is hot. And you are where, Marta? Where are you?
Washington, D.C.
All right, so you're on Eastern time.
It's also sunny and hot.
Yeah, but you got a lot more mug in the air than we do here in L.A. I have access to a pool here in L.A. I arrived at 10 p.m. last night. I've been in the pool 3 times already. Marta, tell us the title and what your book is about, because I know you're a great expert in election theft, and give us a bit on your book.
Okay, the second book, right? The working title is...
Well, the first one was a pornographic novel, so I don't think we'll talk about that one, but the second one is... The second one is what we want to talk about.
I was rereading it, you know, and I just from a different perspective. It's been years. The second book is, the working title is Ballots or Bills, The Future of Democracy. And I take up where I left off in Grassroots Geeks, Pros and Pals. I describe election 2008, the actual election in detail, and then I focus in on the Franken versus Coleman election as the way it should have been done with Bush v. Gore, you know, but 6 months is a luxury, and all those recounts were a luxury. And then I go on to, looking back at election events and retrospectives on 2008. And then Chapter 3 dives in, catalogs all the different forms of election corruption. And at this point, I'm wondering whether to put money in politics or voter ID first, because they're both so much part of the corruption.
Well, that must be if you catalog all the means of election theft, which, of course, Bob knows quite a bit, dating back to his time in El Salvador, then you must have a phone book there. I mean, God, the ways of election theft are biblical.
Yeah, well, I don't have all of them. What I do want to catalog is every single activist organization in the country having to do with elections. And I don't know whether to include the Truth to Vote and organizations like that, but definitely all the ones who want fair voting and are not into corruption.
Your second book now, it focuses on the 2008 election. Is that correct?
2008 and onward through 2012.
Okay. And then Bob Fetrakis, our book, goes all the way through 2016, and we're still adding as we proceed. I want to mention one thing.
Great.
Yeah, so we're going to come back and talk a bit about the 2008 election. But, Bob, Al Gore has just come out with a sequel to his Inconvenient Truths. But he's yet to say, inconveniently, anything about the election that was stolen from him in 2000. And in fact, the first movie he made, An Inconvenient Truth, about global warming, starts off with him saying, kind of jovially, that he was once the next president of the United States. Can you describe the process by which he was deprived of the presidency, and what you would like him to say now about what happened back then?
Well, you know, I mean, what we're really talking about is inconvenient facts that he doesn't want to deal with. And again, those facts are based around one of the most absurd concepts ever put forth that on its surface is laughable, that private, for-profit corporations using secret proprietary software should secretly program the computer voting machines, the central tabulators, and secretly control the voter registration databases. So you set up a system to be stolen, not to be verified, totally non-transparent. And then when it happens, you conveniently ignore the facts. So I want Al Gore to come out and say, I'm a recovering apologist for a corrupt, non-transparent system. I apologize. I should have fought.
It's astounding that Al Gore, I mean, I saw Al Gore the other night on Colbert, and, you know, I just can't hardly stand the sight of the guy, knowing that, I mean, he has to know. And part of what we'll do is we're going to cover 2000, then 2004, then we'll talk about 2008, 2012, and then we'll finish up and talk about this last travesty of an election. But the idea that Gore has now come out with a movie, again, about the climate, and I saw him on Colbert, and, you know, do you think that he actually knows that Jeb Bush disenfranchised 90,000 voters in 2000, or has no one yet told him? And if he does know, why hasn't he said anything? Do either of you have an answer to that?
No, he knows. But look, Harvey, at a certain level, it's kind of a old school gentleman's game. Is, oh, you got me that time. You know, I wish when I was in school there at, you know, Harvard, they would have taught me that trick. He knows. He knows it was stolen. The fact that he used it as a punchline for many years is a bit absurd. He should have dedicated the rest of his life into creating transparency in the system. You know, we assume, you know, they taught him how to read at Ivy League schools. The stuff has been everywhere. Greg Palast has widely publicized it. He, you know, no doubt Gore is obsessed with how he lost. He would have had to run into it. He knows. I mean, I was always surprised when I talked to people at high levels within the Democratic Party. They all know. And occasionally, you know, off the record, they'll tell me, well, you know, we just got to win by double digits. We just got to get the vote out. No, you don't. It's not a gentleman's agreement. It's not some gentleman's game of golf where, you know, an old corrupt, racist Republican Party gets a 10-point handicap and gets allowed to, you know, repress voters and then use private companies to flip electronic votes.
Marta, you were going to say?
Oh, I was just talking about when I first joined Election Integrity. My daughter was at Columbia, and she wrote for the Columbia Spectator, and we together wrote a piece about the corruption in Florida and the Greg Palast discovery. We knew Al Gore was teaching at the Columbia School of Journalism at the time. We published the editorial right in a prominent place in the Spectator. And, of course, we never heard anything back, but we thought, just in case he doesn't know.
Right. So just in case he doesn't know, Al Gore, if you're listening, 90,000 people were stripped from the voter rolls by Jeb Bush, brother of the candidate, the Republican candidate, son of the head of the CIA, our former head. And then they also flipped the electronic voting machines in Volusia County and another county. Which one was that, Bob? There were two counties that Bev Harris documented that the vote was flipped in. And then 16 years, 17 years later, we have Donald Trump in the White House. And he's responsible, for God's sakes. I got some kind of troop transport flying over me. Probably can't. It's carrying all those transgender people that Trump just kicked out of the military. So, you know, it's astonishing to me that a guy can go on and win the Nobel Prize and do all this stuff and go on Colbert and have all this media clout. And after 17 years, and doesn't challenge the Electoral College, and we wind up with Donald Trump in the White House because he did nothing. I mean,
Hillary Clinton not to. She wanted to be the senator who would demand a debate at the Electoral College meeting. He begged her not to.
Yes, that's right. It was challenged on the floor of the Senate. The Black Caucus of the House raise a challenge, right, to the Florida delegation. And isn't that right, Bob? And then Gore would not allow a senator like Paul Wellstone, maybe, or Hillary Clinton, to join in so that there could be a session to challenge that delegation. Is that how it happened, Bob?
Well, Hillary Clinton, when I briefed her in 2004, went into detail how it should have been done in 2000 and how Gore, quote, begged her not to let a challenge go forward on the floor and not to challenge it.
It's insane. You know, I can't even begin to come up with a motivation.
He didn't want it. He didn't want it. He didn't want it so much that he let us down, but he considered it instead a patriotic thing to step aside. That's what he let the public know, that he wouldn't prolong the dispute as a patriotic gesture, but watching him during the campaign, it was clear to me he didn't want it.
He didn't want to be president?
He didn't want to be president. I just intuited by the way he was talking and the idiocy during that one debate where he was making those funny noises that he parodied on SNL. He wasn't serious. He all of a sudden stopped being presidential.
God, you know, it's so far beyond me. Okay, let's jump to 2004 now. John Kerry is running for president. And, Bob, you want to describe what was done in Ohio in 2004 to prevent John Kerry from being president?
Well, what wasn't done? I mean, if you can... And the biggest outrage, I think, is the fact that you sent the state IT guy home around 9 o'clock and allowed private contractors using a parallel mirror-over system, a backup system, to count the votes in Chattanooga, Tennessee, for Smart Tech, which is run by a right-wing, born-again former minister, and that, you know, you can outsource the votes, you can create a notion that somehow, you know, the votes, the mainframe computers went down, the supercomputers in Ohio, and bring in a vote count from a private partisan vendor that was hosting virtually every Republican website of any note in America, including the email of Karl Rove, is in itself laughable. It's contemptuous of democracy. And the fact that you had a level 10 Homeland Security alert in Warren County, diverted the ballots to a warehouse, and then came up with some funny number that was unbelievable, and you call the local sheriff and he laughs and said there was no Homeland Security alert, and you call Homeland Security and they say there was no alert, when these local yokels call a level 10 Homeland Security alert and steal the votes in Warren County as well as three counties down there, ended up with far more than the total margin of victory. All of them with massive problems with their computers, or as in Warren County, a bizarre fake Homeland Security alert. I mean, they make television out of this stuff now, but it's not fiction. It actually happened in 04.
Marta?
Well, what can I say? Mark Crispin Miller and Fooled Again said that the worst part of it, which amounted to tens of thousands of votes, happened with the overseas voter, and it seemed very purposeful in September, which is a crucial time for getting ballots overseas. The server went down so that they couldn't send in their application and print up the ballots, so they had to wait, and they weren't sure of getting them in right, and as a result, tens of thousands. He said that was the worst part of the whole 2004. Of course, we're talking hundreds of thousands of votes also in the case of the man in the middle structure that Bob was describing. And then Kenneth Blackwell and his antics were a disgrace, were reprehensible. And now he is qualified for Trump's commission. This person who is dishonest in every way and misdirecting voters and keeping potential Democratic voters in incredibly ingenious but totally illegal ways.
Now, Bob, as I understand it, George W. Bush and Karl Rove on Election Day in 2000 took one trip out of Washington. They came to Columbus. They did not see the governor. They went to J. Kenneth Blackwell's office, who was in charge of the election. I'm sure they had a very interesting conversation. They gave no public speeches, and then they went back to Washington. Is that correct?
Well, they made an unexpected trip here to Columbus, Ohio. And they did stop in at a call center, and they did meet with J. Kenneth Blackwell. And Matt Damschroeder was at that meeting, or at least I was told so by his staff. But here's the other story. Cynthia Butler, who reported for the Free Press and was one of the attorneys working on the case, she's at a briefing from a religious figure, which we've written about, in the Catholic Church, high up, who, in a small meeting of people he thought were all loyal to saving the babies, goes into detail that how J. Kenneth Blackwell, when the election was totally lost, began to write down numbers from county. We need 10,000 from Miami County. We need another 15,000 from Warren County. And he goes, you won't believe it. All these numbers he wrote that were impossible to get, they all came in. Well, why wouldn't they? They controlled the computers. They, you know, had a group of private contractors. This is the system designed by Michael Connell. They had a structured man-in-the-middle attack set up, which is what Stephen Spoonamore at first speculated on, and then it was confirmed in the King Lincoln Brunsville case that went on from 2006 to 2011. It was entered into evidence. And here's the disturbing thing, Harvey. So you enter the architectural map obtained from the Secretary of State of Ohio, Jennifer Bruner. It shows a back door. It shows how they structured the man in the middle of attack. It's sworn evidence. And then you simply say, well, you know, there was no evidence. This is what they do. This is what Trump does to this day. They simply, they'll say, well, there wasn't a single case. No, there were dozens of cases proven that there was computer fraud. The Youngstown in that county, you ended up with 31 machines flipping. They admitted to it. They admitted they flipped from Kerry to Bush. In Miami County, where we went, they admitted 2,500 cyber votes, unexplained votes without people signing in, were added to Bush. That Bush lost from 138,000 down to 118,000. Just looking at the ballots and cleaning them up, he lost 20,000 votes. And there were other votes lost all over the state of Ohio. And what they do, Harvey, is simply lie and say, well, that didn't happen. It did happen. It's in our book, What Happened in Ohio. Well documented.
Marta Steele, well, tell us, yes. Marta, if you can, summarize all the public statements that John Kerry made about having the 2004 election stolen from him, on which he was thoroughly briefed.
Well, he conceded very quickly after saying every vote would be counted and promising the public again and again. Why did he have to dwell on this? I don't know. He should have dwelt on something else. There are plenty of things he could have said instead, catchphrases. And then he concedes the next day, even though his running mate, Edwards, didn't want him to. And, you know, my theory about that was that it was a personal thing, that he and Bush were in the same club at Yale University, the Skull and Bones Club, and they pledged to each, it's a secret society, they pledged to each other to support each other professionally, no matter what, once they leave the college. And Bush had already been there and was running for his second term, so it was clear that Kerry had to yield. I mean, I'm not a member of this club. I don't know anybody, as far as I know, that belonged to it. It's just my feeling. It makes a lot of sense, and I've not heard any other explanation that convinces me otherwise, and I'd like to. I'd certainly listen to other explanations. But
Bob, do you have a theory on why John Kerry said nothing about the 2004 theft?
Well, you know, I talked to John Marshall, who was a political operative in that campaign, and he says, and I believe him, he's always been truthful, he says John Kerry called him up and said, was the election stolen? And John Marshall told him, yes, it was stolen. He was working as an operative, John Marshall, for General Wesley Clark. And then the next question from Kerry was, well, can we uncover it in 72 hours? You know, essentially, can we, you know, make this public and prove it in 3 days? And John Marshall said, no, it'll take 10 days, you know, before we can even look at the ballots, before they do their initial count period. You know, so the fact that he didn't think he could prove it, and I think he wanted to stay viable the next time around. And Jesse Jackson told him on the phone when we were talking to John Kerry, he said, look, if you're not willing to fight now, we're not going to fight for you in 08. You know, I think it was really clear that Jackson was telling him what proved to be absolutely correct, is that, you know, if you won't fight for these disenfranchised voters in Ohio and across the nation, many of them black and minority and poor, you can't expect any support whatsoever from the progressives and the black population the next time around.
So we have two elections now. 2000, Al Gore wins the popular vote, 500,000 votes, wins Florida eventually after the full recount was done, knows that Jeb Bush stole 90,000 or disenfranchised 90,000 people, knows that there were irregularities in the electronic machines in Volusia County and elsewhere, and to date has said nothing. And in 2004, John Kerry basically sees Ohio stolen, is told how it was done by no less than Jesse Jackson and Bob Fitrakis and his own campaign guy, John Marshall. To this date has said nothing. And so George W. Bush has 8 years in the White House. Now, Marta, let's go to 2008. Tell us how Barack Obama actually was able to win the White House after these two stolen elections.
There was an incredible amount of energy from the public and both the Democratic Party and the progressives. And it had a lot to do with the hope that he promised, and he was like a breath of fresh air, and he was black, and he fit in so well, and he had been sponsored by Kerry at the Democratic election and was introduced to us as a rising star, and even back then my mother said, watch him, and he won by a wide margin, and it had, there was nothing that could be disputed this time around. There was it was beyond all the cheating. The people were able to get out somehow. They were able to get to the voting machines despite all the roadblocks, and there are a lot of them. It was a landslide, only it was said to be a substantial victory, but it really was a landslide if you read about all the millions of votes that were stolen by the corrupt registration rolls and absentee ballot corruption and every form that you can think of. It couldn't get in the way. Millions of ballots more would have gone for him.
Written a whole book now about the 2008 election. What would you estimate the real margin of victory would have been for Barack Obama in a fair vote count?
Okay, well, I'm going to look right at my stats, and I'll be able to tell you better. But Definitely okay, millions. But, millions more than the millions by which he won.
So when people ask us, when they ask Bob and me, well, if they're stealing the elections, why didn't they steal 2008?
They couldn't. They couldn't. There was such a huge explosion of spirit. I mean, you can't underestimate inspiration itself. Was Kerry that inspiring? Was Gore that inspiring? No.
Or Hillary, for that matter.
Yeah.
My understanding,
there was an obscure paper in Columbus, Ohio, that broke a major story. You can read about it on Forbes, among other places, that the voting machine, the third largest voting machine company, was owned by people tied to Bain Company, which was founded by Romney, and his own family was invested through a fund called Solomir. And again, Business Insider, Forbes, and others took a look at that. My understanding is the same newspaper, using the editor who co-writes with you, unveiled the fact that there was these mysterious, unauthorized experimental patches put in all over Ohio, and supposedly to help the media get vote counts out earlier. But, they tried. I mean, you have the famous Rove meltdown. You know, our newspaper also broke the fact about Seidel in that election, what Marta talked about, you know, in 04, that Seidel had direct access to overseas voting, that it had ties to Booz Allen Hamilton and the Carlyle Group. And we broke that story. At one point, the Free Press was credited with breaking three out of the five major October surprise stories in that election, and they weren't hard to break. I mean, they had everything in place. Remember, we went into federal court, and we got no relief there, and we turned around and went into state court, and they kept the vote open. And the judge there, Judge Sarrett, said, if there's any problems with these vote numbers, come back and see us. So the movement itself, what we did in Ohio, which was being mirrored in certain other key swing states by the election integrity movement, really won that election.
It's shocking. Shocking. So 2012, Obama had another groundswell. It wasn't quite as strong. Romney wasn't a particularly great president. I can't remember. Who was Romney's running mate in 2012?
Sarah Palin.
No. That was, McCain.
Oh, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan.
Oh, Paul Ryan. God, what a bozo. So we have two elections where Obama is able to overcome the massive disenfranchisement and the bias of the electronic voting machines, right? So now we get to 2016. And, it's hard to speak without flowing things about 2016. I mean, here Hillary Clinton, you know, when I just read, in Reader's Point News, just this long I Told You So piece by Michael Moore, laying out how he predicted that she was going to lose. And it's based on her lack of charisma, her lack of appeal to working class voters, all this other stuff. And it does not say a single word about the mass disenfranchisement of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of mostly people of color, by Kris Kobach, and does not say a word about electronic voting machines. It's all, you know, horse race stuff. And why is it, how is it, at this point in our history, after the theft of 2000, after the theft of 2004, that people go into 2016, for God's sakes, and don't say a word? And even left progressives like Michael Moore can't bring themselves to talk about the strip and flip disaster of America's stolen election. I just do not get it. Marta, as a woman with Hillary Clinton, I mean, is there something as a guy I'm missing here? What's the deal?
Oh, she herself said that it was sexism, that one of the reasons, at least, that kept her out of office. But that she has so many enemies and so much baggage that if the woman had won, which she couldn't because of all the hatred, and look at Mitch McConnell, who totally obstructed Obama for 8 years. I mean, the groundswell of hatred is enormous, and if she had gotten in, there would just be impeachment. There would be more obstruction in the form of impeachment. It would have been another kind of absurdity, and at least we wouldn't have to worry. Well, would we? They probably would still be clobbering the ACA.
Right, but why is it that she can't? Did she, you know, she wins the exit polls in Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. She wins the election. There's all this obvious red flags about Kris Kobach and the massive disenfranchisement in 30 states. And the day after the election, she says, oh, well, and walks her dogs, and has yet to say a word about mass disenfranchisement or potential electronic vote theft, to the extent that she prevented Joe Stein from doing a full recount. Bob, you're involved in that in Michigan. Do you have an answer here?
With, I don't know why she didn't go forward any more than anyone does. I mean, all the objective social science data indicated that the exit polls were saying one thing in five key states, including North Carolina and, the ones that the recounts were in, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And, John Boniface brought that to her. He brought her a crack team of computer security experts, and she chose not to go forward.
I think she was scared to death, I think, because of all of this lock her up and all of these forces that
incredibly damaging.
He's already brought her back into the discourse. Why not focus on her instead of me? He said, with the public so aroused against him because of the Russia connection. Look at her and what she did.
Hey, Harvey, this is Paul. I'm available.
Oh, Paul Kangas. Okay, stick with us, Paul. At the very end, Paul Kangas, I asked him to call in because there's a special program being offered by the French government in global warming. So close to the end, Paul, if you'll jump in, we're having this discussion with Bob Fitrakis and Marta Steele on the stolen elections of 2000 up to 2016. What we have here is, the Democratic Party has won every presidential election since 1992. But in 2000, you had Al Gore, who many people believe is close to a billionaire. You had John Kerry, who's worth about $500 million, as best I know, based on his marriage to the Heinz fortune. You have Hillary Clinton, who's worth at least $100 million, from what I've seen. All these people win their presidential campaigns, and the next day, and they're all stolen, clearly stolen in Florida 2000. Clearly stolen in Ohio 2004, clearly stolen all over the country in 2016, giving us Donald Trump, and not one of them has said a word about the theft of the election. Has any of them? I mean, what's the deal? So Hillary, he's attacking her. I mean, I think it's good for her that he's attacking her, but Hillary Clinton, my understanding, is one of the very few, if the only persons to lose a presidential race and then have her ratings go down after the election. I mean, it's hard to imagine what things would be like if she was in the White House, but I mean, they've been...
It would be hell. It would be hell.
Well, we might be at war with Russia at this point in time. My buddy Norman Solomon has pointed out repeatedly that, I mean, he likes the fact that Trump is friendly with the Russians. At least we're not at war with the Russians. But, you know, Bob and I, in our piece today, which is at Reader Supported News, soon to be at freepress.org, mostly Bob's writing here, does a long history of Trump's relations to the Russian mafia. You know, people keep talking about the Russians. It's not the Russians. It's the Russian mafia. Bob, do you want to characterize Trump's relations well before he was president with the Russian mafia?
Well, there was plenty of writings and conjecture about the American mob, the five families in New York. No developer of Trump's status could really get along in that city without being involved in the mob. But it appears when you have casinos, and Greg Unger wrote about this, is, you know, the New Yorker, Business Insider, and other publications, is at a certain point, Putin has kind of merged the Russian mafia with intelligence, military people, oligarchs, and Putin. And as long as you're doing things on behalf of Russia, I mean, the mob's almost like, you know, another arm of the intelligence apparatus. So that's happening. Again, strange buildings were built, in this case, with somebody connected to the Iranian, Revolutionary Guard in Azerbaijan. So, I mean, the story is it looks like Trump, with casinos, with these high-end luxury properties and ability to, you know, build these resorts and these luxury building, was perfectly placed to be a money launderer. And that's why it's no surprise that the eighth man in the room was an alleged money launderer who had been charged with laundering $1.4 billion in Eastern European currency and money into the U.S. So I think that's the story, and I think people should look at that story and not so much the other one. I mean, I agree with Norman Solomon. I mean, the United States, I understand perfectly what Putin does. Also, if you take a look, if you Google Yeltsin, right, Time Magazine, Yeltsin covers, I mean, you get one of the most absurd things on earth, Harvey. I don't know. We put this in the Free Press as well. This is the cover. July 15th, 1996. Yanks to the Rescue. The secret story of how American advisors helped Yeltsin win. What happened? The U.S., Clinton and others pressured the International Monetary Fund into giving Yeltsin, who, according to CNN, was 2% favorable in the polls because he was chronically drunk. He had attacked his own parliament with tanks, and they gave him this loan, and he spent between $700 million or to $2.5 billion stealing votes, bribing votes, and buying votes so he could win the 1996 election. The L.A. Times wrote about, and it's on the cover of Time Magazine, Yanks to the Rescue, the secret story of how America's advisors helped Yeltsin win. So I don't know where Putin got this idea to mess with U.S. elections. And
yeah, right.
To some extent, you know, he can mess with them, but he doesn't own the keys to the kingdom. Those are owned by private, for-profit, proprietary corporations who can program whatever the hell they want.
So we have we have a situation. Well, here's a question. What we should probably do is have a cover in the Free Press standing Trump next to Yeltsin. I mean, who's a bigger idiot, Yeltsin or Trump?
Well, yeah, they're very similar. Donald, I don't think, is as inebriated as much as Yeltsin was. But, you know, these neocons loved Yeltsin. He allowed them to loot Russian resources and really destroy the standard of living in that country.
Well, they love Putin, too. The Christian right loves Putin. They see him as some kind of savior. Wow, it's really sickening. So basically, are we out of line, Bob? And you've done a tremendous amount of research on this. Are we out of line in describing Donald Trump basically as a bag man for the Russian mafia? Is that overstating the case?
Well, I mean, you give by bag man, you mean most bag men pay people off. I think we should, refer to him as a money launderer. Even though it may have came in a brown bag or a duffel bag, the money he's laundering. But yeah, he's a money launderer for the Russian mob. That's what everything points to.
Do you
Very
want to speculate?
Interesting. But the Congress won't let him get away with that, and that's what interests me. That he's going to have to impose more sanctions on Russia, and Putin has said Russia is going to retaliate. Now, how do you suppose Russia is going to retaliate? I mean, just the idea
they're
is scary.
Off,
you think he'll go take over more
vodka.
Land?
They're going to cut off the supply of vodka to the United States, and that's what's going to happen. Sorry.
They're going to cut off what?
They're going to cut off our supply of vodka.
Oh, okay.
No,
that's
but
all. I don't know. Vodka.
Well, here's the question, and Bob, this is again for you. Paul Kangas, you're on the line. You've recently been in Russia, so maybe you can give us some insight. But Bob, if Trump's tax returns were released, given what you know about his background as a mafia-connected money launderer, what do you think his tax returns would show?
I think it would show, the ones we're looking at are the ones where he almost lost $1 billion. But, I mean, one of the interesting things that we should look at is what happened in Baku in Azerbaijan, one of the most corrupt nations on earth, where Bill Clinton and the Clinton family and foundation have done quite well, as has BP. Remember, they detained our friend Greg Palast there, and they were wearing little BP signals on their military and army and police uniforms. But there was a luxury complex built there, and it was never really opened. And I think to some extent, the property matters less. There's an old saying that you can launder a whole lot of money in the dirt, meaning construction. You can move around millions of dollars, particularly on these high-end luxury projects, and no one's going to say anything. And if, on the other hand, you have casinos as well. So I think if you looked at his taxes, you'll see a variety of connections to various shell corporations. Remember the eighth man in the room, the money launderer who emerged, he was accused of using approximately 2,000 shell groups to allegedly launder that $1.4 billion. So I think they need to look at who Trump was doing business with in various parts of the world and realize at a certain point when you're in the drug areas, the mafia is in the red mafia, when you're in the human trafficking area, when you're in arms sales,
Harvey.
You need a place to launder money.
Hello, Harvey. Okay, listen, Paul Kangas, you want to chime in? You were in Russia recently.
Yeah, I just came back from Russia, and I can tell you a lot about over there because I met several hundred Russians. But the main thing that's going on in the world right now is the French government has offered 4 years of free college to any American who will come over and join this program they have over there, free everything. I mean, free books, free housing, free food, any American that wants to study climate science and climate policy. So I'm going. I've enrolled in. You go to their website. It's called, and this is hard to believe, but this is their website, Make Our Planet Great Again. You will see when you log on. It's a real French website, and they will start asking you questions about how you want to make the planet great again. And they'll ask you, you should think this out before you go on the website, because they're going to ask you serious questions. And they expect like a 25-word answer to important questions. But they will then enroll you, and 3 weeks later you'll get a second set of questions. And then after that you get an acceptance letter. So this is real, this is serious, and people ought to take advantage of this. Now, my impression, having just been in Russia, is that the Russian people are very free-thinking people. They are very political. The nice thing about traveling across Russia on the Trans-Siberian Railroad is you sit in these four-person compartments, so you have private conversations with Russians and Mongolians and Chinese on the train ride. It's amazing. And even though everybody doesn't speak English, they want to. And they bend over backwards to sit there. And it's real easy to get into a conversation using a picture or a book in English about the environment. That's what I did. I even carried a small solar panel with me. And so I had great conversations.
Paul, what is your impression of having been there, of what people think of Putin and of Trump?
Well, I think that Putin is a fairly honest person, and most Russians do too. To test this theory out while I was there, I bought a Putin T-shirt, and I wore it all over in Russia and Mongolia and Siberia and China just to see what people's response would be to somebody wearing a Putin T-shirt. And they seem to think he's an honest, down-to-the-earth, hardworking spy who has the best interest of Russia as his interest. I don't think that they had anything to do with our election. I think who had something to do with our election is this guy, John Podesta. I think it was Wall Street who sabotaged Bernie Sanders' campaign, and that really, because Bernie Sanders could have easily beaten Trump. And if the Democrats would have been smart, they'd have put Bernie Sanders up against Trump and beat him. And we now have President Bernie Sanders. Say it loud.
The Koch brothers didn't want him, though. I've been told that it wasn't just Hillary's people. It was also part of the deep state. They didn't want him.
Yes.
Well,
hold on, Paul. Paul, hold on. Let's get this. It's clear. Marta Steele, we're about to run out of time. Marta Steele, your book is, and where do we get it?
Okay, it's not out yet. My other book is Grassroots Geeks, Pros, and Pals. And you can order that right at your you and Bob's website, freepress.org/store.php. And when my new book is completed, I'll certainly do a lot of talking about it and hope you'll have me back on. It's called Ballots or Bills, with two lines through the S after Bills, The Future of Democracy.
Wonderful. And Bob Petraeus.
Hey, Harvey.
Bob Petraeus. Hold on.
You can see all of my videos from Russia on my YouTube site.
Okay, what's your YouTube site?
It's Paul... 8, the number 8, the figure 8, Kangas, K-A-N-G-A-S. And I put up about 50 videos of people I interviewed all over Russia.
Wow, that's great. One. That's a very cool thing. And you also, people can also find out about applying to the French, what's it called, Make the World Great Again?
Make Our Planet Great Again. That's on my YouTube site also.
So people should look into that. Bob Petraeus, will finish with you. What's our book? And you're going to post our new piece at the freepress.org website. It's up at RSN right now. We just supported news. What's the title?
The book is The Strip and Flip Election of 2016. We now have the Trump edition out with the Don on the cover. It goes into the long history of problems. You can get that at freepress.org, and The new one is out on Trump and will be the cover story for the Free Press.
Right. And Bob,
the printed version.
Our co-authored piece is at Reader Supported News and was posted up today. Has a picture of Trump there. And we're calling for Trump to resign before National Nagasaki Nixon Day, which is August 6th. Paul, there's going to be a rally in August 9th, rather, at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, right, in the Bay Area on August 9th.
Yes.
Daniel, I was just going to speak.
We're having 12 rallies on August 9th all across the state of California. They're everywhere. They're Santa Rosa. They're in Sacramento. They're in Los Angeles.
The one in Los Angeles is going to be at Santa Monica. That's at 7 p.m. at the Mushroom Statue in the Santa Monica Civic Center. Bob, you're going to have one August 6th, I believe, in Columbus, Ohio. And we want Trump out by Nagasaki Nixon Day, and then we have to have a new election. Mike Pence, you know, they haven't really touched Mike Pence. Nobody's talking about Mike Pence. It's all about the other people in the cabinet. God help us when Mike Pence gets in the White House. But we do believe he's reasonably sane. Bob, you want to say a last word in Russian as we head off into the sunset here?
Well, I'll defer to your Russian expert there, Paul.
Yes,
Paul. When you go back to Russia, are you going to wear a Trump T-shirt and see what happens?
No. I try to not appear as an American, but you can see all my videos. Just go to my name, Paul H. Kangas, on YouTube, and you'll see a lot of interviews I do with people all across Russia. It was shocking.
Well,
amazing.
Okay then. All right, this has been a good deal here. I think that Donald Trump is going to resign at some point. I think he's trying to fire the special prosecutor. The special prosecutor is going. I'm not alone in predicting this. I think he's going to pardon himself and his whole family, and we'll either have a terror attack or a war or both, and Trump somehow will resign, and then we'll have to deal with this incredibly right-wing fundamentalist nutcase Mike Pence, they've kept him under the rock, boy. We haven't heard a word about Mike Pence since Trump took office. Thank you all so much for being with us, Bob Strakis, Marta Steele, and Paul Kangas. Next week, we'll be back again for another hour in Solartopia, and thank you, everybody. We'll take it away, Pete Seeger.
Thank you.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went to